try by Ridgeway should be robbed. Why? They will be kicking the ball out of the end zone.
Well, they sure will. The thing is, will he reach the end zone line? He may kick it all the way out for a single point if he misses, but they're going to try to prevent that. But well within his range, if he kicks it, it's Ishii Switko's upright.
A 35-yard attempt for David Ridgeway. It's up.
Growing the Game with Ballsy is a podcast dedicated to growing the game of football in Saskatchewan. Each week, Michael Ball will talk with writer guests, but he'll also highlight amateur athletes, coaches, and builders in this province growing the game we love. Now, here's Ballsy.
Growing the Game with Ballsy, brought to you by Pizza Huts in Saskatchewan, also Mark Greshner Photography, Paul Waldo at Royal LePage, Boys Next Door Window Cleaning, SAS Selects Football, Riviere Ag Seeds out there in Radville. And where are they now? A presentation of Double Z Ag Sales out there in Weyburn. Corey Zadorozniak for grain hauling, grain marketing, and crop insurance with Corey Zed out in Weyburn. Time now for Where Are They Now? And this is a great conversation as I had a lengthy chat with longtime Rough Rider equipment manager and Plaza of Honor inductee, Normie Fong. What a great guy. Man, does he have a number of great stories. When you stepped away from the game, you were the longest serving equipment guy in the CFL at 34 years. Does that record still stand, Norm?
No. No. I would say Calgary, Edmonton, and probably Toronto.
Yeah.
They're equipment guys. I know Dwayne in Edmonton, if they'd have gone this year, it would have been his 50th.
Yeah, and he still wears shorts on the sidelines. I can't remember. Did you used to wear shorts on the sidelines regardless of the weather?
Well, I did until I smartened up later in life.
Yeah. Like, why do guys, like, why does Dwayne Mandruziak do that?
Well, actually, that Georgie in Calgary started that.
Okay. Why?
I'm not really sure. It was kind of an equipment guy thing just to show people that you're tough or something. I don't know. and you know, I can remember George one year in the playoffs wearing shorts, but he had the biggest fur coat I've ever seen on. Wearing shorts. So I don't know.
That's hilarious.
It took me a long time to figure out that was pretty stupid.
When did you decide it was stupid, Norm?
Well, one playoff game, at the end of the game, we come in and my thighs and legs were so red that they were actually burning the touch. So I said, that's enough of this stupidity. That was the last time I did that.
So, Norm, who was your best friend in football in all those years? Who was the guy, like, you know, I've said this to quarterbacks. When you wanna pick another quarterback's brain, you don't call an equipment manager. When a brain surgeon's ready to do brain surgery, he doesn't call a mechanic. So who was Norm Fong's best friend in football?
Well, I got to admit that when I started, I really was hesitant to take the job because I was pretty young and I didn't think I could do it. So I called, believe it or not, it was George Hopkins in Calgary, and Georgie kind of convinced me that you got to, you know, take a chance. I'd helped the Rams for quite a few years, and I was helping Dale Laird whenever I could at some training camps. So Georgie was the one I looked to when I started for advice on budgets and ordering and stuff like that. So I'd have to say George in Calgary was probably one of my biggest early influences.
Best thing about being an equipment manager, what is it, Norm?
I think the friendships. You know, when you first start, one of the first things that I was told was you got to be friends with everybody, but you can't be buddies with anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And as the more years I put in, I found that to be so true.
So what does that mean? Exactly what does that mean, Norm?
Well, if you get too close to certain people, they're going to start asking for stuff, whether it's, you know, T-shirts for the family, hats, you name it, jackets. With a trainer on a team, what are they going to ask for? Can I get 10 rolls of tape? You know what I mean? Versus if you get friends or buddies with the equipment guy,
yeah,
you know, I maybe he'll give me half a dozen shirts that I can give to my kids or
yeah,
to my family. So
okay, you get the straight goods here. You can't be fired now. You're in the Ryder Plaza of Honor. You're one of the big guys, one of the big faces. I think you're ranked number 75 in that book that was released. So who did you have a soft spot for in all your years? Come on, who did you give an extra T-shirt to? You can tell us, Norm.
Well, Bobby Jurison, I would have to say that I, you know, and I'm still friends with a lot of those guys. Like Ridgeway, I talk to probably once a month, and Bobby Jurison I talk to at least once a month, if not more. And Poley, obviously,
yeah.
You know, Poley and Aldag were the ones that I asked to induct me into the Hall of Fame,
yeah,
the Plaza. And I mean, Bob and Roger and I, along with Brian Elliburn, who's since passed, we kind of all grew up together starting at the Rams. So, you know, those friendships are things that you continually have, and I keep close to my heart because they're pretty good friends. So.
Yeah, no kidding. Hey, Norm Fong joining us here in Growing the Game with Ballsy. My first chance talking to him in an interview situation. I'm embarrassed to say it's taken this long, Norm. I know we had something lined up before that was on me, not on you. So I'm glad you've taken a few minutes out of your time to talk to me. So you got inducted, I believe. Farthing and Burgess went in with you. Were you a Burgess or an Austin guy?
I'd have to say Tommy. Like I got along with Kent and everything, and he was good. But Tommy and when he was there, him and Fairholm, actually they were big golfers.
Mm-hmm.
And Tommy took the time to teach me how to make golf clubs.
Oh, really?
So I made a set of my own golf clubs, and he just took the time. He showed me, you know, how to weigh them and different flexes and stuff like that. And so for a couple of years, I was into making my own drivers and stuff like that. I made some for my brother and that, and it was kind of neat. So I Tommy was a pretty good friend when he played, and I want to say Tommy was more friendly towards the players.
Yeah,
like he was one of the boys, and I'm not knocking Kent and saying he wasn't, but Kent was more businesslike, and that's why Kent made such a good coach.
Yeah, I was going to say that, Norm. Kent's exactly how I'd picture him to be. He's friendly. He's like you. He's friendly, like you said. I mean, he's friendly, but not a buddy, and that's what a coach is. A coach is friendly, but he's not a buddy. He had more of that demeanor than Tom Burgess. At least that's how I saw it from the outside.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Like Kent. I mean, he fit in. He never rocked the boat or anything, but he was always, once he come to the field and that,
mm-hmm.
he was 100% football.
Yeah.
Hey, and that showed in the way he coached.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Hey, Norm, so speaking of coaches, before I go down memory lane with you, who is your favorite coach to work with in all your years? Because you went through a few of them.
Oh, by far, Coach Miller.
Okay. What did you like about him? What did you like about him?
Well, you know, when you're the equipment guy, you're working with a bunch of people, and sometimes, especially, you know, after 9/11 and stuff like that, it was really tough to move your equipment from point A to point B. And Coach Miller is one of the only coaches that I ever worked with that would say, "Hey, Norm, we'd like to do this. Can we do it? What do you think?" You know, most coaches wouldn't say that. They would just say, "I need it there at 10 o'clock, do it," and walk out of the room. And Coach Miller was never like that. He always asked your opinion, and if it wasn't something that could work, he would say, "Okay, well, what if we did this?" So,
mm-hmm.
you know, he was easy to work with. If you had any trouble in the room and you mentioned it to him, he would look after it without, you know, kind of saying, "Well, he came to me and said, I got to do this," sort of thing. So he was more than a coach. He was like a mentor and just easygoing and completely, total respect for everyone in the organization.
Was there one coach that you just didn't see eye to eye with, that it was just a nightmare? Can you give us some dirt?
Coach Matthews was a little hard to work with, in that, you know, it was his way or the highway.
Mm-hmm.
But the one thing I'll say about Coach Matthews is he respected everybody on your staff. And I can remember we had a player that one day was, we always had a couple ball boys. And
mm-hmm.
one of the players, I can't remember who it was, but he was giving one of the ball boys a hard time. And Don just happened to walk by and notice it. And he stopped and pulled the player over and told him, if you ever seen him do that again, he'd cut him on the spot.
Mm-hmm.
And from that point on, I kind of had a different respect for Coach Matthews, because I realized that he was more than Coach Matthews. He looked after everybody on his staff, not just his coaches.
Hey, Norm, that's a good point. A couple seconds ago, you brought it up. So I've always said this: we live in the you know what of Canada. It's tough to get in and out, connecting flights. It's got to be a nightmare to move a football team, in particular the equipment. So was that the toughest challenge for you? And how much tougher was it once 9/11 happened? Because that would have been a nightmare.
It was really tough. After 9/11, they started putting smaller planes coming into Regina, so you could get the players out without a problem, because we could technically almost book a whole plane, but we couldn't carry our equipment on the planes. So we had to find a company, and thankfully the league kind of went out and found a company that would transport all the different teams' equipment from point A to point B. But the problem was you had to have your equipment ready to go a day before you normally would.
Okay, yeah.
So you had to go to the coaches and say, Coach, you know, we can't have a padded practice like we normally would 2 days before, because that equipment has to be gone to whatever city, because they would come and pick it up,
yeah,
and truck it.
What was the hardest city to go to in the CFL? I mean, I know, was it, I guess, and how much of a challenge was the American expansion for you?
Well, the biggest challenge on the American expansion, we always chartered, so it wasn't hard that way. But I can remember the first trip we made into, I think it was Sacramento, you had to have a manifest. And on the manifest, you had to put down everything that you were loading into that plane.
Wow.
The problem was, at that time, we were with the brewery in Saskatoon.
Okay, yeah.
We weren't with Molson's.
Right.
And they put on 32 24s of a green beer.
Ah.
But they didn't tell me about it.
Oh.
So when we got to Sacramento, we're unloading the plane, and they come and out to the bus. Obviously, the truck's out there loading up our equipment, and I'm on the bus, and the customs people come and said, who's in charge of this equipment? And Al Ford jumps up and he says, well, our equipment manager here. And they said, well, we've got a problem. And he said, what's the problem? And he said, well, there's a bunch of cases of beer on there that aren't on the manifest.
Oh, no. What'd you do?
I ended up getting pulled off the bus and spent I don't know how many hours with Al in customs trying to explain that it wasn't on the manifest, because I didn't know about it.
Oh,
I mean,
wow.
Al knew about it, but he didn't think of the manifest. So they impounded our equipment, and it took, like I say, hours for Al to convince them that it was for a party, like a tailgate for the Regina people or fans.
Wow.
And they actually impounded our equipment, locked it up in a truck, and took it away, and I didn't know what to do. I mean, I didn't know what to say. I I had my manifest, and everything was the same as theirs except these cases of beer.
Norm, how did you get into being an equipment manager? Like, why? How does a guy decide, you know what, I'm gonna be an equipment manager? Was it a case, and forgive me, and correct me if I'm wrong, but, you know, you love sports, but you realize you're probably not going to go far in athletics, but you want to be involved in something like that, so that's why you go down that path, either a trainer or an equipment manager? What was it like for you?
Well, I was going to Balfour and played, you know, I obviously played all the sports,
mm-hmm.
and the football coach at that time was Mr. John Neely's.
Yep.
And I went the first year, and I made the team and as a backup. And one night at practice, I just thought, man, what am I doing out here? I'm running my ass off, and I'm never going to play. So I went to Coach Neely's, and I said, Coach, I want to quit. He says, what do you mean you want to quit? I said, this isn't for me. Like, I hate running. I'm, you know, I'm not into this. And he says, well, you play basketball, you play volleyball. And I says, yeah, that's different, but this is too much running, and I'm not playing. I said, I'd like to look after the equipment. And he says, are you sure? And I said, yeah. And that's how I started. So I ended up for my last couple years looking after the equipment at Balfour. And I started working with the Regina Caps senior hockey team at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And I did that for 2 or 3 years while I was still in high school. And then when I graduated, I just Jimmy Francis talked me into coming out and helping with the Rams because Alex Kerr, who did it, was going to retire. And so I started out there, and that's basically how I got started.
So you were a Pats trainer too, and, you know, your life could have taken a different path. You were almost you could have ended up in hockey. Tell us about that, because you actually were involved with the Los Angeles hockey team at the time. Tell us about that, because I think you were around 20 years old when that happened.
Yeah, I was. I was only 20, and I actually had just I got a job working for the city of Regina in the summer,
mm-hmm.
and the Los Angeles Sharks were having their training camp here in Regina, and Jim Buzdell, who worked for the city, was scouting for them.
Right.
And Jim asked me, because he also played on the Regina Caps, the senior team, he said, hey, the Los Angeles Sharks are going to hold training camp here. And they're looking for someone from Regina to kind of help out and, you know, someone that knows the city, that knows a shoemaker and stuff like that. And I said, yeah, you know, I'll gladly do it. So I took a 2-week leave of absence from my part-time job at the city and helped Los Angeles out. And then in, I want to say the middle of October, they fired their head trainer.
Mm-hmm.
And they asked Jim if I would come down and take over the looking after their equipment, and they were going to move their equipment guy up to the trainer. And I thought about it, and like I say, I was only 20 years old, and I thought, you know, what am I going to do in Los Angeles and, you know, being by myself and that. And Jimmy says, well, you know, it would be a good experience, and you're only going to go there, you know, till the end of playoffs if they make it. So I said, sure.
Mm-hmm.
I went down there and spent the rest of the season there. And I remember the second day I was there, I got pulled over on the highway, on the freeway, by a highway patrolman. And he walked up to the side of my van with his gun out. And I'm 20 years old. I've only been here 2 days. And I'm literally crapping my pants. Like, I was shaking like a leaf.
Right.
And he come up to the door and told me to roll down my window, and naturally I'm shaking like a leaf, and he's thinking, what the hell have I got here? And so he's asking me, you know, what are you doing? And I said, well, I work for the hockey team. I've only been here for 2 days. And he says, well, why are you shaking so bad? And I said, well, being a Canadian, you get pulled over, they don't usually walk up to the side of your car or your van with a gun pulled.
Wow.
And he explained to me that they pull over, it's, you know, I mean, I'm driving a van for the hockey team that's got no markings, no windows. And he says, when we pull up to a van, he says, we don't know what we're walking into.
Yeah.
He says, we got to be kind of cautious. And
Makes sense, right? And it kind of ties into what we're seeing today in the world, you know, with Black Lives Matter and cops and relations with people. It's good to see a story from two different sides. That's a really neat story, Norm. I'll tell you what, I'm really pissed off at myself that it's taken me this long to pick Norm Fong's brain. Okay, so Norm, but do you think about it? If you would have stuck with hockey, you know, maybe you would have had a more lucrative lifestyle because who knows, maybe you end up in the NHL. Do you ever regret not staying with hockey and going with the CFL route?
Sometimes, you know, like I came home at the end of that year with Los Angeles because I got homesick.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was only 20 and that summer I got a call from the Houston Aeros trainer asking if I'd be interested in going to Houston and working, because they knew that Los Angeles was going to get a new trainer, and the trainer that was there when I was going to get demoted back down to the equipment. And I thought about it, and I said, no, you know, I was homesick, so I said, no, I'm coming back home, and, you know, I'll get a job with hopefully with the city again and just continue working with the Rams, and I was lucky enough when I got home, the Regina Pats asked me to come and be there if I'd work with them because their trainer, Charlie Walsh, had got sick.
Mm-hmm.
So I was fortunate enough that one season I had won the Canadian Junior Championship football with the Rams in November, and then that May I won the Memorial Cup with the Pats, so
you got the golden touch. Okay,
yeah, so I thought this is pretty cool.
This leads me to a really good question here, Norm. I was going to ask you this earlier in the interview. Do you have a bunch of memorabilia you saved? Because you would have got cool, like, old school sweaters and shirts, and you've got a Plaza ring probably. You got a Memorial Cup ring. You got you won the Canadian Junior Football Championship. Do you have a lot of cool memorabilia? Maybe what's your favorite piece, Norm?
Well, you know, we got Memorial Cup rings are pretty neat, and the ones we got when we won they looked more like a high school.
Yeah, Jostin's ring.
Yeah, they were just a little blue, and so about 10 years ago or so, all the guys on the team got together, and Kim McDougall had made arrangements for Jostin's to make us an actual championship ring from our Memorial Cup team. So we all got, you know, everybody threw in and we got those rings. So that ring's pretty special to me, along with obviously my two Grey Cup rings. But when people ask me which championship do I like the most, and, you know, it's tough. They're all championships are great. But I think the one for the Memorial Cup means a little more because it's so hard to win. I mean, you spend 10 days or 2 weeks in whatever city with the team, and you got to win a round robin tournament, and it's so hard to win that Memorial Cup championship versus, I mean, it's hard to win any championship, but in the CFL, you're only one of nine teams competing for the championship versus the Memorial Cup here.
Yeah, but wasn't that, I totally agree with you, Norm, 100% behind you. But just for what you said there, because I've lived in Saskatchewan most of my whole life, been a Rider fan my whole life. We went from 1976 to 1988 before we made the playoffs. We didn't win a Grey Cup. It took us 23 years to win a Grey Cup in an 8/9 team league. Like, I get what you're saying. You're 100% accurate. You should win it on a more regular basis. But how sweet was that 89 championship when we finally won the Grey Cup?
Well, you know, for me, it's special because I'd already been in the league 10 years.
Unreal.
And never had a sniff for the Grey Cup. And then I look at my buddy Dwayne in Edmonton.
Yeah.
And he's got like 11 or 12 rings already. And I haven't even gone to a Grey Cup yet. So when we did win, it was like, wow, I finally finally climbed that mountain and we got a ring.
So, hey, let me ask you this: as an equipment guy, how does this work? I've never asked a guy this. So let's maybe think about the 2009 Grey Cup when the Riders won and then didn't win, or let's think about the 1989 championship. Let's go there. Let's talk about this. So when do you get the championship apparel? You know, Grey Cup champion hats or shirts that you see the guys wearing right after the game. How do they get given out? Do they give them to you and you give them out? How does that work?
Yeah, usually what happens is that, like, normally the T-shirts and hats are given out right almost on the field, and it's usually they come to the equipment guy, who in turn would give them to. It's usually the communications guy that's handing them out on the field.
Mm-hmm.
And most teams, there's usually not enough for your coaching staff and all your equipment staff and that. So normally what happens is a week or 10 days, 2 weeks after the Grey Cup, companies will send an extra, teams will put in and say, well, we need another 3 dozen or 2 dozen.
Mm-hmm. So when a Grey Cup comes to Saskatchewan, like in 1995 when Calgary and Baltimore played here, the first ever game, were you involved in that, helping the Calgary trainer or the Baltimore Calgary equipment guy or the Baltimore equipment guy getting set up and everything like that?
Yeah, what happens is the whatever city the Grey Cup is in, the home team equipment guy is the host for both teams, regardless if he's in it or not.
So is that more exciting for you, or is it when you're, like, I know you're part of a team that can win, but is that a better week for you, or is it a better week when you're actually, say, on the road in Toronto, Riders, Hamilton, and you're having to do equipment on the road? What's a better week for you?
It's probably better on the road, and the reason I say that is it's easier to control your dressing room if you do win, and it's also less work because you're actually paying somebody. The league gives you a budget to pay the home team equipment guy to do your laundry.
Mm. Oh, okay.
So you're not spending an extra 3 hours a night doing your own laundry. It's kind of you bundle it up and they pick it up and deliver it the next day. So
what's the best? Equipment change in all the years doing football? Let's just speak with football here. What was the best equipment change that you've seen where you're like, yeah, this is revolutionary?
Well, for me, it was the helmets. You know, when I started, they were using either a 6 or a 12-point suspension helmet.
Yeah.
You know, and then we got into the water helmet, and then we got into the Pack 3 where the suspension was replaced with foam bubbles, I want to call them.
Yeah.
And then we move from that into the air. You know, and so that's probably the biggest revolution. I mean, shoulder pads have always basically been the same, except now that, you know, all the shoulder pads are pretty much custom made and they're,
yeah,
God, I want to say maybe a third the size of what they used to be.
Do you go to the new stadium and have you seen the equipment room in the new stadium? Do you marvel about? Are you like a kid in the candy store? You'd love to have had a facility like that.
Yeah, you know, Gordy gave me a tour of the equipment room the week that they moved in, and I mean, it's just the equipment area alone. It just amazed me how they, you know, took the design of all the, they went to tons of colleges and pro teams, mm-hmm, and took the best of everything.
Yeah.
And that they designed it just, it's unbelievable. I mean, they spend probably a third of the time there versus when we were there, you know, where we'd spend after practice, it would take us upwards of 5 hours to do all the laundry. They do it all in maybe 2 hours.
Wow, man, it was a labor of love for you. You're definitely a guy that set the stage for the generation that is now. That's why you're in the Plaza of Honor. A few more quick questions for you. So you said when you took over, you weren't sure you could do the job because you were so young. How long between that time and the time where you thought, okay, I got a handle on this? Like, how long did it take you to feel comfortable knowing what you were doing?
I would say probably 2 years, a good 2 years before I really felt comfortable. And part of that is because Coach Lancaster really had my back. And if, you know, I ran into any type of problem and you know, if players got on my back for anything, he was right there to say, hey, you know, you want to go back to the way it was sort of thing. And
yeah.
So, I would say a good 2 years before I felt comfortable doing things on my own without calling either Edmonton or
yeah.
Or Calgary saying, well, you know, what should I do with this? Do you think I'm ordering too much? Do you think I'm not ordering enough? So,
hey, we've had a lot of losing football here. You were part of some winning football, but a lot of losing football, as you alluded to, taking 10 years, but by the time you got into the league to win the Grey Cup. When guys are frustrated, they generally take out their frustrations on their equipment. Did you have to butt heads with some guys, with a coach to say, hey, tell these guys to quit throwing their helmets around or doing this or doing that?
Yeah, you know, and that just doesn't happen when you're losing. We had a player that, for some reason, decided that the padding in his shoulder pads was too thick. So he would, every game, he would take all the padding out of his pads and play with just the plastic.
Oh, man.
And it got to the point where I had to go to Coach Barrett and say, hey, Coach, this guy's going to break his shoulders up. You know, he's playing. He takes all the padding out of his shoulder pads. And Danny says, you're kidding. And I says, no. And he says, well, next time he does that, come and tell me. So we're playing a game, and the guys are out in the warm-up, and Danny always made them go out in their shoulder pads. And I brought Danny in. I says, hey, look, you know, so-and-so's got his pads on again, took the pads out. And he goes, well, where are the pads? And I says, they're in his shoebox. So Danny went and got the padding out of the shoebox, and when they came in from the warm-up, he said, send them in my office.
Mm-hmm.
And I did, and that was the last time the kid did that.
That's good. Good that Barrett had your back, and good that you had some eagle eyes. I imagine you patrol that locker room like a jail cell, in the sense that you make sure guys' stalls are all okay, that they're not dickering around. You kind of got to have your eyes and ears open to seeing what's going on. Okay, Norm, couple more quick questions for you. If I ask you right away off the top of your head, what's the one rider memory for Norm Fong that sticks out in his mind?
It would definitely have to be winning the Grey Cup in 89.
Mm-hmm.
It was, like I say, it took 10 years to get there, and when we got there, we really enjoyed it.
Okay, so is that you're not a player, Norm, okay? Not saying you didn't have anything to do with it, obviously, but this is a question I ask, guys. Is it more important to go into a Hall of Fame / plaza for Norm Fong or win a Grey Cup? Like, is the plaza, when you're up there being inducted, all those people are eating dinner and clapping for you, is that the pinnacle of Norm Fong's career, or is it winning a Grey Cup?
Oh, the plaza by far. The plaza, when you win a Grey Cup, or a championship in any year, that's the culmination of 1 year's success. But the Plaza of Honor, or the Hall of any fame, is a career.
Yeah.
It shows your career. And to me, the Plaza was the top of the mountain for me, for an East Ender to end up in the Riders. Plaza of Honor really meant a lot to me.
What are you most proud of, lastly? What are you most proud of your career? What do you want to be remembered as?
I think the way we ran our program and what we did to help minor football and stuff like that.
Yeah, you were big with Football Saskatchewan, with equipment and helping that, all that out too. That was near and dear to your heart.
Yes, it was. You know, with Bernie Schmidt, we started an equipment check for the schools to not to try and eliminate schools. I mean, when we started, schools wouldn't let us in because they thought we were going to take all their equipment away.
Mm-hmm.
And all we wanted to do was to let them know that, you know, helmets were cracked and broken, shouldn't be worn, and shoulder pads, you can do this to recondition them at a third of the cost. And it took a couple, probably 5 years before we were actually accepted into a lot of the schools. And, you know, now they still run the program with Brad Hirschmiller and his brother. And they, you know, in a good year, we might have looked at 50 or 60 schools. They're literally into the hundreds now.
Oh, wow. Okay. Norm, I've really appreciated this time, but I gotta end on a high note. Do you have one prank that you pulled on a player? Your favorite prank or trick that you pulled on a player? Like, did you ever put like any of that hot stuff in his jock or do anything ridiculous that had everybody laughing?
Oh yeah, I didn't do anything like that, but I did all the mending.
Okay,
I was there, and one day I took Ridgeway's keys while they were on the field playing, and I sewed them into his suit pants. What I did was I put the keys in his pocket, and then I sewed the pocket closed halfway, so he could feel the keys. He could stick his hand into his pocket, but he couldn't get to the keys.
Oh no!
And my staff, Barry Tamman. He was the only other one that knew I did it. And Ridge walked out. At that time, the players parked their cars kind of on that North Railway.
Right.
And Ridge was always one of the last guys to leave. And we knew he couldn't get to his keys. But anyways, he walked out to his van, and we were kind of standing at the back door. And I can't repeat what he said, but he said something Chinaman and come running back in. He could feel his keys, but he couldn't get them out of his pocket to get into the van.
That prank right there gets you in the Plaza, Norm. Hey, thanks for this, man. Sorry it took me so long, but I really enjoyed my time with you.
I appreciate it, Ballsy. Take care.
This has been Growing the Game with Ballsy. If you have a football story you'd like to share to help us grow the game, email Michael Ball at mball@harvardbroadcasting.com. Ballsy can be heard weekdays in Regina on 104.9 The Wolf Morning Show and during Saskatchewan Roughriders and U of R Rams broadcasts on 620 CKRM.